This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today.
I was just finishing a piece of chicken because work ran long, and so I didn't get a chance to eat before because I come off my little 44-hour fast at 4 o'clock, but I was working with somebody else, so I didn't get a chance to finish my little snacks. So I was gobbling something down here in the car because I do not want to do what I did several weeks ago, where I was taking a bite of chicken during the podcast and then almost choked to death. That would have been a very exciting podcast. So anyways, off to the races. Been a good week at work. All is well. Everything's going fine at my major client. Was a short week because of the Labor Day weekend. And, oh, thank God, I'm still mobile. Because it could have been a very exciting weekend. Oh, it could have been a very exciting Labor Day. My son-in-law and I decided that we were going to clean out the pole barn, which had an accretion of stuff. That began shortly after we bought the property together. Shortly after my business partner and I bought the property together, through the building of our houses, through living out there, et cetera, et cetera. We moved into our houses out there in 1993, which means that I have been out there now for 26 years. Wow. Wow! Is that right? 1993 to 2019? Yes, 26 years. A lot of stuff can accrete in 26 years, and it had. So there were just sections in that pole barn of stuff that just needed to be hauled out. The problem was that some of those sections were really like wonderful, luxurious stretches of property and real estate for black recluse or brown recluse spiders. I mean, we had piles of old lumber in there, and So we started cleaning out around some tires and that kind of stuff, and Alan, my son-in-law, flipped over some stuff and he went, and there's some brown recluse spiders. He gets them occasionally in his house. We don't really get them much, or I don't really find them much, maybe because I don't clean in the corners like he does. But as we started working through that pole barn, goodness, there was a bunch of brown recluse spiders. I mean, the type of thing where normally with brown recluses, you see like one here, one there. You would pick up a board carefully and flip it over, and there would be four or five skittering across that board in every direction. And that happened over and over and over and over again. So we were estimating somewhere 50, maybe more brown recluses that we saw skittering away. So who knows how many there actually were. So that was pretty exciting. But we got it all cleaned out and got it cleaned up and sprayed some bug spray, and we're going to have an exterminator come out and, you know, really douse the pole barn with stuff. The other thing is the wasps have had full reign in that pole barn for quite some time, and my son-in-law was pointing out all the wasp nests that were in the rafters, and, you know, my thing was, they'll probably leave us alone, it'll be fine. And so we were working along, and near one of the doors, Alan was walking by, and he just turned to happen and look, and there's this wasp nest over there that isn't very big. It's not very big. It's probably 6 inches, maybe long, maximum of 6 inches, and maybe 2 inches wide. It's just kind of this oblong thing tacked right against the wall. There were probably a couple of dozen wasps actively crawling all over that thing, and he just went, okay. He said, we're going after that one. Well, he had gotten and brought out some bug spray earlier, some wasp spray. And so I just thought he was going to go over and take a can and take care of it. And so he was walking over there with two cans. He said, okay, we're going to do this all at the same time. And I went, what? What? We're doing it all at the same time? Yeah, he said, grab those two. So we got four. We've got four cans of wasp spray. And we're standing back from this about, I don't know, 10 feet or so. And he's like, okay, we're going to go on three. I said, okay, I got the left side. He said, yeah, I'll take the right side. Okay, here we go. And so we went Game of Thrones on that wasp nest, man. I mean, we went 3, 2, 1, and boom. And I mean, it was just like there was nothing. And then it was completely covered in wasp spray foam. And so we just hammered it for a few seconds and then left. And he kind of looked at me and said, that really went a whole lot better than I thought it was going to go. He said, I thought we were going to be running out of here as those wasps came at us. But we prevailed and conquered. And then so we used some of that on the brown recluse areas. And we used some of it on another wasp nest he did where things were getting a little rambunctious. So needless to say, it was very exciting. Beyond all of that, beyond the wasps and the brown recluse spiders, of course, was just the carrying stuff, the lugging stuff back and forth and back and forth and up and over into the dumpster. And we even had a cap for a pickup truck that we had to haul around and flip up and over into this dumpster, which, if we had been thinking, we would have just put at the bottom of the dumpster, turned upside down, and stacked stuff on top of it. But of course, that would have been too easy to do. So we actually ended up hinging it up and then shoving it over. And yeah. But we got it done. And I mean, I was tanked. I mean, I was done by the end of, by about 1 o'clock on Monday. And so was Alan. We were. It was time to get back indoors, and so I did some reading, and that all went well. I was just thinking, man, here we go. It's going to be interesting to see how things go tomorrow. But you know what? Wasn't too bad. And I am mobile. Thank you, Jesus. I'm mobile. So that all was fine. That was fine. So then just had a short week, 3-day work week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then I'm off tomorrow, do some grocery shopping. And this week, I've kind of been prepping for Uncle Sam Day, which will be a week from tomorrow. And that all seems to be going fine. I'm getting together with my daughter tomorrow morning. I'm getting together with my daughter tomorrow morning because she's going to help me out with one part of it. And so I don't think this will... Well, I won't say that. Never mind. I won't say that. So I told her the supplies I was going to bring down tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, and she just laughed. So, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Anyways, so all is well. Things are moving forward. I was telling a friend, an old missionary friend, friend from long ago. She's not old, but a friend from long ago. I had wished her and her hubby a happy anniversary, and she said something about hope all is well with you, and I wrote her back today. I said, oh, all is well. It's all is well. I said, I'm really enjoying my 60s. It's just so good. So good. So all is well. Everything's well with Ned. She's puttering along on her projects, and I'm puttering along on the writing. I'm reading. At this point, that all seems to be on schedule. I'm trying to figure out what we're doing for the cover. I ordered a hat. I ordered a hat for the cover for my grandson, and I'm hoping it's too big. It really needs to be too big so that it just kind of hangs down and all you see is like the bottom of his chin and his lips. So that'll be fun. I gotta turn my granddaughter into some kind of a cat burglar or thief or something for this cover. So we gotta talk about that and figure out what we're doing there. But this is, it's a good time of life. It's really, this is good. All is well. All is well. Anyways, so I did come across an article today that was interesting to me for a number of different reasons. And of course, when I got to the end of it, I was like, yeah, well, those suggestions you're making there, that's not really going to help. So as I am wont to do, after, you know, I go through the article, then I'll tell you what I think needs to be done. It's like my mom in the Philippines. These students in the Bible college would come to her and, oh, Sister Farron, you know, I don't know what the will of God is for my life. And she'd say, I'll tell you what the will of God is for your life. And to her credit, it usually worked out pretty good. So anyways, the name of the article, it came up on my Pocket trending feed. And I had already decided I would do this as part of the podcast before I looked at the dates on the article. So that's interesting. We'll get to that. So the name of the article, by the way, it's podcast 545, I think. Heading to 2000. So the title of the article was, A Two-Year Study of More Than 5,000 People Shows That This One Activity Destroys Your Emotional and Physical Health. Now, destroys is a strong word, but it's clickbait. So, anyways. This is from University of California, San Diego, and Yale researchers share their surprising results. So, the author of the article is Minda Zetlin, and so she starts off the article by saying, look, do you want to stay healthy both emotionally and physically? Well, the researchers from UC San Diego and Yale have some simple advice. Limit the amount of time you spend on Facebook. And she says in the article, well, this may sound like typical anti-social media crankiness from academia. This time, they have some impressive research to back up their case. Holly Shakya, assistant professor of UC San Diego, and Yale professor Nicholas Christakis spent 2 years following 5,208 results, 5,208 results who were part of a Gallup long-term study. Okay, after asking permission, they monitored the subject's Facebook use directly through Facebook, from Facebook. I don't know if Facebook would let you do this now, but at the time they did this, Facebook did allow this. And they wanted to monitor it directly from Facebook because people often underreport how much time they're actually spending on things because it just drifts by and they don't notice that, oh, 45 minutes just disappeared while I was just checking my newsfeed, okay? At the same time, they asked the participants, they asked them about their emotional and physical well-being, and they monitored their body mass index, which is a rough indication of health. Really rough, but, you know, at least it's something. And they did that 3 times over the course of 2 years. So they said, quote, overall, our results showed that while real world social networks were positively associated with overall well-being, the use of Facebook was negatively associated with overall well-being. And this was an article that appeared in the Harvard Business Review. So this isn't just, you know, crank. This is a well-respected journal. They said, quote, the results were particularly strong for mental health. Most measures of Facebook use in 1 year predicted a decrease in mental health in a later year. So, the author of the article goes on to ask, why is too much Facebook bad for your emotional health? Previous research has shown that the social network creates a sort of false peer pressure. Since most people are cautious about posting negative or upsetting experiences on Facebook, the social network creates a misleading environment where everyone seems to be doing better and having more fun than you are. Okay, as the researchers put it, exposure to carefully curated images from others' lives leads to negative self-comparison. Now, that connection, exposure to carefully curated images, then automatically leads to negative self-comparison. There's another factor in that connection that they never address, which is the problem. And they said that it's no comparison for the real thing. And the real thing being getting together with other people. So, and the author of the article goes on to say, but what of Facebook's magical ability to connect you to friends and family even when they're far away, to help you find long-lost friends and relatives, to keep you up on what's going on with all the important people in your life? There's lots of research to show that having a social circle and an active social life and community leads to better health and greater longevity. The researchers wondered if a virtual social life and community would create the same benefits. No, they don't, as these results make clear. In fact, they have the opposite effect. In addition to negative self-comparison, the researchers noted, increased use of Facebook and other social media tends to take up a lot of people's time and can create an illusion of closeness. To the extent that time spent on Facebook takes you away from real-world social gatherings, you lose the benefit of being in a community, the researchers say. The same is likely true if you're at a gathering in body, but your eyes and mind are locked on your smartphone, checking out your friends' latest posts. So now the author concludes the article and says, so what should you do? Indeed, what should you do? This is what the author of the article says. I'm not going to tell you to stop using Facebook. You wouldn't listen to me anyways. And with so many people in the world using the network, it's impossible just to ignore it. But limit your use to no more than 1 hour each day that the average user spends on the site. And try to put down your phone more often, look up at the people around you, and rejoin the conversation that's happening in the real world. Okay, so that's basically their advice. Just say no. Don't do it. You know, if you don't understand the underlying mechanisms of what's going on here, that's not great advice. But if you have a framework between flesh and spirit and you understand that the corruption within you, the destroyer within you, the little Hitler that's always trying to take Poland within you. I'm getting my mail. If you understand the mechanisms that are going on within you, you would understand and you will come to realize that it's not really Facebook and it's not really the carefully curated images of others. It's not really what it is. What it is the lies that your flesh is going to tell you about those images. That's where the crux of it is. And if you understand what the lies are that your flesh is going to tell you about those images, then you can blunt the effect of the destruction that the flesh is going to try to wreak in your life over really everything you experience. Lots and lots of years ago, when I got into the nitpicking stuff, I wrote kind of a little poem. Well, it's actually before the nitpicking stuff, but it was fun because one of the things that that would always happen with me when I was watching television is I would never quite suspend my disbelief. Never quite. I would suspend it somewhat and enjoy the I'd enjoy the films or the TV or that kind of stuff, but there was always this thing behind the scenes, and it's what really led to all the nitpicking. Because I would pick up on things like continuity errors, where from one camera angle the sandwich is whole, and then that the actor is holding, and then from the other camera angle it had a bite taken out of it. And as it would switch back and forth, and I'd see that, then I'd say, yeah, see, there. And in my mind, then, I can imagine the cameras and the lights and the working and the fact that this is not a person sitting here eating this sandwich. In fact, this is an actor pretending to eat this sandwich, and he forgot what he was doing or she was doing. And in one of the cuts, she or he actually took a bite out of the sandwich. And many of you will know that, in fact, there's a whole thing called continuity where people are behind the camera supposedly watching for that type of thing. But, of course, it happens all the time. One of the really great things about doing nitpicking is that it makes you aware. It allows you to step back from what you're looking at, and it makes you aware of the greater context. And you can use that same type of technique when you're looking at Facebook. You can remind yourself, these are curated images. How many selfies, did they have to take before they got the one they posted? I kind of have an unwritten rule. No, it's unwritten, but it's my rule about these podcasts that unless there's something really bad, like I cough right in the middle of it, or, you know, I'm choking on something or something. When I start this thing, I start it and I leave it open. I typically do not do edits. And the only way I'll pause it is if there's something where I'm going to be out of the car and I, you know, or someone calls me or something, and then I'll pause it and then I'll start it again and I'm back on. I do not edit this stuff. One of the reasons I do not edit it is because I want people to get it raw. Okay, this is just me. I'm just talking. So it's important to get raw. And I don't know if I'll actually be able to reproduce it, but one of the things that comes to mind in this is I wrote a poem years and years and years ago called The Sad Tale of Johnny B. And I can't remember all of it, but the idea was around this being able to get behind and understand that actors are just actors and scenes are created and all that kind of stuff. And the first stanza of the poem went something like, the stars don't shine for Johnny B when they come out on Johnny C, because Johnny Carson used to be on a night. The stars don't shine for Johnny B when they come out on Johnny C. They never seem to be themselves when other selves are on the shelves and not their names, personality tees, for he's losing his grip on reality. And the idea of the poem was that quote-unquote reality, what he sees on the television, what he used to think was real as he watched that on the television, that he doesn't think that's real anymore because he can see the grips and the grunts and the people building the stages, and he can see the actors. And so the first really practical way of causing Facebook not to affect you is to simply understand, remind yourself, yeah, they probably took like 10 selfies before they had this, and they probably would say this, and they might have even had an argument before this, or that great vacation that they were taking was probably blisteringly hot, or this, and you just remind yourself of the context. And in reminding yourself of the context, then what happens is the flesh loses material to work with. But if you just look and go, wow, that's beautiful, I wish I was there, and I never get to go anywhere, and then the flesh can stick in its knife, because now it's got something to work with, so it sticks in its knife. Yeah, you never go anywhere. Those people are so much better than you. I mean, then it just starts lying to you, starts sticking in the knife, twisting the knife, twisting the knife. But even then, if you can stop and say, wow, well, look, this feeling I'm having, this feeling of despair. I mean, what is the lie that's underneath this anxiety? What is the lie that's underneath this anger? What is the lie that's underneath this depression? That these people have a better life than me, and I'm never going to have anything like that. I don't know what kind of life I'm going to have. And I have no idea what kind of life they have, because all I'm seeing is curated images. The other thing to do when it comes to the flesh is, since the flesh knows when you're in a social gathering, the flesh knows the benefit of being in a social gathering and interacting with people. And so what you're going to hear down at the base of your spirit when you're in a social gathering is, you know, you should really check Facebook. You should check Facebook because there might be something really cool happening and you're missing it. You should check Facebook. You should pick. And you need to tell your flesh, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay, I am here with real world people. I am going to learn to interact with them. I am putting down the phone. I always have my phone sound muted. I have the phone usually face down on the table when I go to breakfast with people. There are rare occasions when I get a notification to my watch and I'm like, oh, I got to take that one. First thing I do is apologize. I am so sorry. I just really need to check this. And then I check it. And then if it's not bada bing, we're out in 3 seconds, I'll say, okay, just one moment. Sorry, sorry, sorry. I'll do the response and then, you know, out with breakfast with a friend so the people know. And then boom, then the phone goes back down and stays down. Stays down. It's on the table in case there's an emergency. And if you can keep it on the table and not look at it, fine. If you need to for a time to actually put it someplace, like in your pocket, or put it, leave it in the car or something, out of sight, obviously, so it doesn't get stolen. If you need to do that, that's fine. But I don't necessarily consciously limit my time on Facebook. It's just I've got too much else to do than to be spending all that time scrolling through people's feeds. And so I check here and there, and like I said, today I noticed that so-and-so was, you know, wishing her hubby a happy anniversary, and so, you know, I just responded with happy anniversary and moving on and going on, you know? Yeah, okay, I won't say that. Never mind. So, all is well, and the whole, you know, the whole book thing is going well. Work is going well. Life is good. I'm really enjoying my 60s. We got Uncle Sam Day coming up. I think that's about everything. You know, that thing I did not say, it really just kind of broke my whole rhythm. But here's the thing. Remember, you're looking at curated stuff. Remember, when you're watching TV's movies, it's all created. Try to imagine what's happening behind the scenes when that stuff gets created. Remember, whenever you have a feeling of despair or anger or depression or any of those things, it's coming straight out of your flesh. Your flesh is telling you some lie that you really need to ignore, or at least get some truth on it so that it dispels. Remember those things. And then, you know, Facebook is fine. And when you're with other people, when you are with other people, absolutely, absolutely put the phone down. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.